So open to questions, comments.
Okay, so for many years, I watched my child in dangerous situations that sort of escalated, and I managed to do my practice fairly regularly, not all the time, but pretty regularly. And then when it reached the point where we were pretty devastated every day, it seemed like, well, it definitely happened, that I was not even able to drag myself in to sit on a cushion or, you know, in my and do the practice when I most needed it. When I most needed to be doing it. And I even knew, I would say to myself, this is what I'm doing right now. I would occasionally be able to do it. So, in a situation where you're already involved with kindness for others, already kind of taking advantage of the helping in the community that's available, how do you kind of break through? I mean, finally we did because our situation has improved, but but for probably half a year, you know, I just wasn't able to do the practice that I should be doing. So that I consider a huge block.
Okay, so you're talking of a situation in which your child's having difficulty. You're very involved with helping your child.
Worrying because you can't.
Yeah, worrying because you can't. Yeah, trying to help, worrying because you know it's not working the way you want. You know you need to get to the cushion and do your spiritual practice, and you're not getting yourself there. Yeah, this is very common. You know, what you said about the time that you most need to be doing your practice, then you just can't get yourself there. This is the value I found, okay? When I was doing my initial training, when my teachers would introduce certain practices to me, I had to make promises to do those practices on a daily basis. Okay? So there are many practices that I've promised my teachers to do. Now, to me, making a promise is something quite important, and especially to my Dharma teachers, because those are the people that I respect the most and I value the most, and I don't want my relationship with them to be littered with broken promises. So even I don't necessarily do my practice very well every day, I always do it because I made a promise. Okay? So I think there's a certain value in making promises to do a practice because it gets us to the cushion. Yeah? Because I know when I wake up in the morning, the most important thing I have to do that day, besides not harming others and being kind, is to do these practices that I promised my teacher I'm going to do. Because my promise with my spiritual teacher really means a lot. Okay? So every day I do those practices, rain or shine, doesn't matter. I'm sick, doesn't matter. I'm up at some ungodly hour to catch a flight, to travel somewhere. I do those practices. Okay? So I think there's real power in making a promise that way. No, because that gets us to the cushion. Once we get to the cushion, then the benefits come.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also it's very important when we're caring for others that we have to keep our own spiritual center. Because it's so easy to get off-centered when we're caring for others. And it doesn't matter whether it's a child or you're doing peace work in society or you're working at a hospital or wherever. Wherever we're doing social work or, you know, social, some kind of work that directly benefits others, it's so important to keep our own spiritual center. Because, you know, we hear people talking about compassion fatigue or burnout, and I think that happens because they've gotten off balance. they haven't been able to keep their own spiritual foundation steady and solid. And so they've gotten off balance by working too hard and maybe expecting too much of the people that they're trying to help. Or, like you were saying, worrying about the people that they're trying to help. Okay? And so all these expectations, all this anxiety, the worry, then it takes our toll on us, and it actually impedes our ability to offer as much to others in the future, because that energy is all going towards frustration, sometimes anger. We're angry at the person that we're trying to help, aren't we? Don't we get angry sometimes at the people we try and help? You know, look, you idiot, you're doing this and it's so harmful, just do that instead of this and you'll stop all this suffering. And the person doesn't do that, they keep doing this again and again and again, and you just get furious. It's like, you idiot, okay? And it's hard to deal with it. Then all of our energy goes into anger, doesn't it? Okay? Or it goes into worry, it goes into frustration, it goes into anxiety, yeah? And that energy just gets wasted, yeah? When we're able to keep our spiritual center, then we can more easily discern what are people actually capable of doing in what period of time, and how much can we actually expect from the advice or the help that we give them? Yeah. And we begin to see that helping others, the delight from helping others, has to come through the action of giving the help itself. Because we cannot control the result of the help that we give, can we? Yeah. I mean, it's the old thing, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. We have to get the delight and the joy by leading the horse to water, because we can't make it drink. All we can do is get it there. It has its own mind, and we can't crawl inside somebody else's mind and reformat the hard disk. Yeah, it's hard enough working with our own hard disk, isn't it? Yeah? So we can lead the horse to water, can't make a drink. So then we see, okay, I'm helping somebody, I'm doing this and this, and then I have to let go. I have to let go of my expectations. I have to let go of my worry and anxiety. And I did what I'm capable of, and now I just make prayers for the person. Yeah? But in order to keep helping this person and other people over the long term, I've also got to keep my spiritual center. And anxiety, worry, anger, these all take me away from my spiritual center. So it's important that I keep to my practice. It's important that I have some time to rebalance my own mind, because that will give me the internal strength to keep on helping.
No, I just wanted to leave some comments too. One of the comments that I would expound on with Susan is that I came coming to the Treasure Valley group in the last approximately 10 months, and much like exercise, which I've been doing all my life, there are times where I'm like, I just don't feel like it. But then I go, and afterwards I have a great sense of contentment. And similarly, one of the things that's helped me out is there are times where I'm just like, I'm blowing off the Dharma meeting, I don't feel like going. I'm tired, I just don't want to do it. But similarly, whenever I've gone to the group that's here with Dan and Jack and some of the other people, the amount of energy and the source of, you know, inspiration that you get just from being around other people has been really a tremendous influence. And you know, if you're by yourself and you're by yourself long enough, I find that your mind can play tricks on you. Like, like what I said yesterday, oh, I'm just drinking a little bit, or I'm doing this or that. But when you're around the other people, that really is a huge source.
Yeah.
It's like a wellspring of energy. So.
And I think that's a very important point.
Yeah.
That when we're alone, our energy can get depleted and we start rationalizing things. But when we make an effort to go to the meetings of our Dharma group, then we get so much energy from practicing with other people. Regardless of whether there's a teacher there or not, just practicing, just being with other people who have similar spiritual values, that all is so invigorating. And then, of course, when you sit down to practice, what are you doing? You're saying words that may all sentient beings have happiness in its causes. Well, this is not the usual thing that you hear in American society. So just you even do the recitations, yeah, or do the meditation, or talk with your Dharma friends, you're hearing words and talking about ideas and concepts and practices that you don't hear anywhere else in your life. And just knowing that, wow, there's people interested in developing impartial love and compassion for everybody. And just having the ability to discuss this with other people, it completely makes our, it makes us feel so uplifted, doesn't it? Whereas when we say, oh, I don't feel like going, I think I'll just sit and watch TV tonight, then what are you watching on TV? Sex and violence. Does that make you feel uplifted?
Mm-hmm.
No, not at all. Yeah. So when we put in that little bit of energy, yeah, to get in the car and come to the Dharma talk, it has a big influence. Yeah.
In my house, the room where my translator is also the room where the computer and the table with the snail with papers and the diaper changing table and the dresser. Yeah, it's a catch-all room.
Okay.
It's got a room with the room and the door. Uh-huh. And I don't really have much to practice at all, I'll admit. Unfortunately, I get too focused, but no excuse, but that's the reality. So on top of just the sense that if that room is messy, I feel like there's no way I could possibly be grounded and do a practice or sit down or, you know, stuff in the way. And so if I take care of that and I made time maybe in the evening where I had more energy than in the morning, then if I'm feeling like my dad all these excuses, if I feel like my time is limited, what would you suggest? Sometimes when I think, well, if I take the time to pour the water and really set up the shrine and then sit down and then how many prayers do I do and then how long do I spend, and by then I must have been interrupted by then. Like, I keep finding ways that it's just not going to work and I might as well not do it.
Okay, so you're suffering in the book of excuses why I can't practice the Dharma. Yeah. You're in chapter 1559 and 13. Okay, this is what it speaks about. Okay, yeah. So you know, I'm going to be interrupted. There's so many other things I have to do. Oh, if I pour the water bowls, then I've used up so much time. You know, it's like took 5 whole minutes to do it. And, you know, I really don't have enough time to do practice now because I wasted all my, well, no, I didn't waste. I spent all my time pouring the water bowls. Now I've got to take them down. That's going to take another 5 minutes. Oh, my God, you know, how much time. I think I better go talk to my friend on the phone for an hour because I'm stressed out. Yeah? It's a thing of priorities. Yeah. And so it's really saying my spiritual practice is a priority. Yeah? And if it means giving up talking on the phone a little bit, yeah, I can give up talking on the phone half an hour. You know, if we take the time to organize our day better, we have the time. What I see in America is people's lives are totally unorganized. Okay? You know, gone are the days where you go grocery shopping once a week to get your groceries. Instead, people every day go into the grocery store. Oh, I ran out of milk today, I've got to get this. Tuesday, oh, I ran out of applesauce, got to get that. Wednesday, I ran out of this, got to get that. How much time do you spend going back and forth to the grocery store every day? Whereas if you did your shopping once a week, got it, brought it home, you'd have so much more time. And with gas prices, you would have more money, and you'd have less polluted air. Okay? Just even small things like organizing our time better. So we're not, you know, running errands all over the city in different parts every day. But, you know, you go out one day and you do everything. Yeah. And if you run out of something in the middle of the week, you'll live until the end of the week when you get it. Okay? So I think a lot of it is just time organization and really, you know, seeing, well, what's important and what do I need to do? And I think especially if you have small kids, what a gift to your kids for them to be able to see you sitting and being peaceful. Yeah? Because parents are always saying to their kids, shut up and sit down! How is a kid going to sit down and shut up when mom and dad are screaming at him? Doing the very opposite of sitting down and shutting up themselves, you know. Mom and dad are out of control. Does the kid ever see mom and dad being peaceful? Does your child ever know how to be peaceful and how to be content alone? Or does your kid always need some amusement? Yeah. The kid needs to have the TV, or the radio, or the Game Boy, or the this, or the that. You know? What an incredible gift to give your kid, to teach them that you can be happy sitting there breathing, being peaceful. And that mom and dad know how to be calm and peaceful. So they have a role model for what it's like. Otherwise, all they see is, you know, there went mom, whoop, there went dad. You know? Okay? So I think a lot of it is setting priorities and then really sticking to it. If your kid interrupts you and you say, come in and sit on my lap. And then you chant your mantra out loud. And then your children learn the mantra, and they learn to chant it with you while they're sitting on your lap feeling loved. What a nice thing. Yeah. Okay, maybe you're not in, you know, in great states of concentration, but wow, what an incredible thing to share with your child, just being able to sit and be peaceful together. Without the TV, without the computer, without the cars, without the toys, without this and the that. Yeah? Teaching your kid how to spend time with other human beings. Just sit quietly for a while and do our little digestion meditation. So think about what you heard and integrate it in your life.